Neighbours had called Sibusiso Mpongose an excellent father, citing how much time he seemed to spend with his children. But when his life began to unravel, and it seemed he was going to have to answer for his actions, he chose instead to ensure that everyone left behind would suffer the real consequences. On an ordinary Tuesday in September 2019, he carried out a ghastly plan, which would end four lives and forever alter many more. This is True Crime South Africa. I'm Nicole Engelbrecht, and you're listening to episode 205, The Mpongose Family Murders. True Crime South Africa is an independent podcast and relies on listener support to keep going. There are many ways you can support the podcast. You can check out all of them at truecrimesouthafrica.com. The most impactful way is by joining the Patreon community. Patreon members get free access to TCSA events, exclusive episodes, discounts on my audiobooks, and ad-free episodes. So you don't have to listen to me say this every week. You can join the Patreon community from just $2, around 32 rand a month. And if you aren't big on commitment, not only is there a free 7-day trial, but you can also cancel at any time. New Patreon supporters get a shout out when they join. Listen through to the end for that. Patreon.com/True Crime South Africa. Please. And thank you. A quick warning that this case does include mention of violence toward children. My sources for this episode include several media articles and court appearances, as well as an episode of the series Imibuzo. So, let's get into episode 205, The Mpongose Family Murders.
The following episode may contain sensitive material, including descriptions of violence, sexual assault, or graphic descriptions of injuries to victims. If you feel you may be triggered by such material, please consider this before accessing our content. To access trauma counseling or services, please see the helpline information in our show notes.
When Zolisile Dladla met and married Sibusiso Mpongose in the late 2000s, Zoli came into the marriage with a 7-year-old daughter, Ayaka, from Zoli's prior relationship with Vusi Gianni. Zoli worked as a teacher and was devoted to her work. She also really wanted to have more children of her own, so it wasn't long until Zoli and Sibusiso welcomed their first child together, Sipesitle. 4 years later, Kwezi was born, and 2 years after that, Kuklekonke rounded off their family of four children. Ayaka was, by all accounts, a wonderful older sister, and her teachers would say that she was happy at home until a few years into her high school career. Relatively soon after the birth of her youngest sibling, things had started to change at home. The Mpongose family truly presented to their community in Pinetown, KwaZulu-Natal, as a very happy and normal family, so no one really saw what might have been happening behind the scenes. Zoli's family, though, admitted that they had been aware that things between the couple had been difficult for quite some time, and Sibusiso had, according to them, been abusive towards Zoli. Divorce is never an easy decision to make, and it's made especially more difficult when there are children involved. Because this case would never go to a full trial, we do not have a lot of information about exactly what was happening behind the scenes in the Mpongose home, but certainly by 2019, both Zoli and Sibusiso were well aware that there were major problems in their relationship. The difference seems to be, as is probably quite normal, the view of the problem was different from each end. Sibusiso would later say in his plea explanation that he had come to suspect that Zoli was having an affair. He claimed that on two occasions the younger children had been playing with Zoli's phone and he'd taken it away from them, and then, in his words, WhatsApp had just opened, and he'd seen messages between Zoli and her ex, Vusi Gianni, Ayaka's father. Sibusiso said that the nature of the messages had been concerning to him, so he'd confronted Zoli about it, and she'd explained that the vast majority of the messages in the message thread were actually between Ayaka and her father, as the girl had used Zoli's phone to communicate with her dad. Ayaka and her biological father had maintained a strong relationship, even after her mother had married Sibusiso, and she often went to visit him during school holidays. Sibusiso seemed unsatisfied by this explanation, and also complained about Zoli having a photograph on her phone of Ayaka and her father. Sibusiso would at some point also confront Vusi Gianni about his suspicions, but the man also explained that there was nothing untoward happening between him and Zoli, and confirmed that he usually communicated with Ayaka through her mother's WhatsApp number, because the girl didn't have a phone of her own. Sibusiso was seemingly still not satisfied with this, and would later claim that he had still believed there was an affair happening between the two. On Zoli's end, the woman was clearly coming to the end of her tether with her husband. The nature of the abuse that was later mentioned has never been clarified, but as you'll soon hear, even Ayaka was afraid of Sibusiso by 2019. There's something else, though, which only gets a very short mention in some sources, but which must have played a major role in the decisions Zoli made. And that is that in mid-2019, Sibusiso Mpongose was charged with rape. Now, the sources that do discuss this make it clear that the rape charge was not in any way related to the family. Of course, the victim who had reported the rape would not be named, ordinarily anyway, and I will say that eventually the charge would be withdrawn, probably because by that point the accused was already facing significant prison time. But when this charge was laid, it was mid-2019, and none of what would come to pass in the Mpongose home had occurred yet. But I can only imagine that when added to everything Zoli had already experienced with Sibusiso, this would have been a huge contributor to her eventual decision to divorce him. And in late August 2019, Zoli told Sibusiso that she had made this decision, and she had served divorce papers on him. Later, Sibusiso would say that during this time, he had been spiraling into a deep pit of despair. He claims that he had attempted to contact his psychologist for a therapy session, but his psychologist had been out of town at the time. In his reasoning, he would never mention the rape charge against him, nor what impact that may have had on the ending of his marriage. Of course, he was under no obligation to do so. He had not been found guilty of that charge. Instead, he framed the breakdown of his relationship as a direct result of his suspicions of infidelity. Yet, he claimed that he had not wanted to divorce, and he had wanted to try to make the marriage work. Others around Sibusiso noticed this change in his life too. Neighbours, although mostly unaware of the details of what was happening, said they noticed that he was spending a lot less time with his children. Ayaka had a close relationship with some of her teachers at Pinetown High, and one said that it was clear that the girl was struggling with what was happening at home. Zoli was doing her best to maintain a calm home life for her children and end her marriage as peacefully as possible. She quietly continued to do her job and stick to the children's routine, hoping that Sibusiso would quickly make a plan to find other accommodation so that she didn't have to take action to get him to leave after she had handed over the divorce papers. But all the while, Sibusiso was developing a plan of his own, one that would completely blow up the lives of all who were close to the family and end the lives of four of its members. The morning of Tuesday, the 3rd of September 2019, started like any other. Zoli got up early, prepared the younger three children for school, woke up Ayaka, and said goodbye to her older daughter. Each weekday, Zoli would ensure that the younger three children got to school, and then she would head off to her own school for work as a teacher. Ayaka would then get herself ready for the day and meet her school transport down the road from her house. Sibusiso would usually be the last of the family to rise and prepare for the day. On an ordinary day, he would head off to work once Ayaka had left for school. But after she said goodbye to him that morning, Sibusiso did not go to work. Instead, he waited for the local hardware store to open. And when it did, he went to the shop and purchased all new locks for the house. He spent the majority of the morning changing the locks in the house and then pocketed the new keys. The family's usual routine was that the younger children would be collected and brought home around the same time that Zoli finished work. Ordinarily, they would all arrive within 5 minutes of each other, so the children were never at home without someone being there. That day, though, Zoli's first inkling that something was wrong was when she received an email alerting her that the Taxify e-hailing account she shared with Sibusiso had ordered a taxi going from their house to the younger children's school. Although she thought this strange, she did not immediately have any fear around this. He was the children's father, after all, and perhaps he just decided he wanted to spend some time with them. When Sibusiso arrived at school to collect the three children, they too, understandably, thought nothing of it. Kukle Konke, Kwezi, and Sipe Sihle got into the taxi with their father, and soon they were home. There are many aspects of what Sibusiso did that indicates that he had deeply thought about what he was doing. One of the first was the changing of the locks, which, as would later become clear, was undoubtedly to prevent anyone from entering the home and saving his children's lives. Another was what he did next. He gave some money to his oldest child, 10-year-old Sipe Sihle, and sent the child to the shop. Sibusiso clearly did not want the older child there while he carried out the murders of his younger children, in case they intervened. When Sipe Sihle was safely out the door, Sibusiso called his younger children into separate rooms. I will warn you that the following is difficult to listen to. He then bound his children's hands and feet and placed a gag over their mouths. Then, using a dressing gown belt, he strangled each child until they were unconscious and then hoisted them up and hung them from the burglar bars in the house. When Sipe Sihle returned home, Sibusiso did the same. Finally, with all three of his biological children dead, Sibusiso called another Taxify e-hailing vehicle. This time, he was headed to Pinetown Girls High School. Ayaka was standing with a group of friends when she spotted her stepfather walking toward her. Her friend had an umbrella up to shield them from the sun, and she said that Ayaka had suddenly moved behind the umbrella and positioned it to hide her face. She asked her what she was doing, and Ayaka said that she was just adjusting the umbrella. Then Ayaka said something that would stay with her young friend forever. If anything happens to me, let my mom know that I've been kidnapped or something very bad has happened. The words made no sense to the young girl. But then she heard a man's voice calling across the quad. And within seconds, she recognized Ayaka's stepfather appearing at her side and quickly guiding her away as she made one final silent plea with her eyes for her to heed her words. Understandably, the young girl had no idea what to do or why her friend was so worried. How would she know if something happened and when would be the right time to let someone know? Would she get in trouble for telling when, at the face of it, there seemed nothing wrong with the stepfather collecting his stepdaughter? She watched her friend walk away. Sibusiso took her school bag, and Iyaka carried a small bag that he had with him as they disappeared into the distance. Sibusiso had guided Iyaka to the waiting taxify vehicle and told the man to drive to New Germany, an area just outside Pinetown. He had the man stop in an area of dense bush, and the pair got out and continued on foot. One can only imagine what may have been going through Ayaka's head at this time, wondering where on earth her stepfather was taking her. Sibusiso would later admit that he knew he'd have to do something different with Ayaka, because she was bigger and stronger than her siblings. So he guided her to a spot off the road and told her to walk in front of him. As she did, he pulled another dressing gown belt out of his bag and suddenly wrapped it around her throat and began to strangle her. Later, Sibusiso's body would be photographed by police and he was covered in scratch marks. It was clear that Iyaka had desperately fought for her life, but her much larger and stronger stepfather overwhelmed her, and soon she was dead. Sibusiso dragged Ayaka's body deeper into the bushes, and then he went on a drinking spree. Each of the taxify drivers he'd engaged with during this time said that he'd been completely calm and behaved normally while he was in their vehicles. They had absolutely no idea what he had planned for the children in his care. While Sibusiso was carrying out this horrendous plan, Zoli had become concerned when she couldn't get hold of him to find out why he'd collected the children. She ascertained that the younger children had indeed been collected, and when she called Ayaka's school, they told her that her oldest daughter had left with Sibusiso too. After calling a neighbour to knock on the door of the house to see if Sibusiso and the children were home and receiving the news that no one was responding, Dolly and several of her family members went to the police station. To their credit, the police responded immediately and accompanied Dolly to both schools to collect first-hand information, and then they went to the house. Dolly quickly realised that her keys weren't working, which only heightened her panic. She gave police permission to break down the door, and as soon as they stepped inside, the true horror of what Sibusiso had done became clear. In three different rooms of the house, the children hung from the burglar bars. Neighbours told journalists that they would never forget Zoli's screams coming out of the house that day. With three of the children confirmed dead, the police's attention now turned to tracking down Sibusiso Mpongose and trying to find Ayaka. From the moment the younger children were found, the investigation proceeded through many different routes. The news broke relatively quickly and spread on social media, and friends and family members contacted investigators to say that Sibusiso had been in contact with them during the day. One friend in particular became vital to tracking him down, as he was in current and ongoing contact with him. The man worked closely with detectives and managed to ascertain that Sibusiso was in an area called Quad Dabeka, not far from Pinetown and the New Germany area. He had told the friend that he'd been drinking and was considering jumping off a nearby bridge. As police directed the man in how to deal with the messages, they started to drive to the location described. Quickly, they spotted Sibusiso sitting on the grass near the bridge, drinking. As soon as he saw them, he fled into Quad Dabeka, and although police gave chase, they lost him. In among the messages to friends and family, police found that Sibusiso had revealed the location of Ayaka's body, and she was recovered. Zoli was given the horrendous news that's all of her children, had been murdered. Throughout the night and into the next morning, the search continued for Sibusiso Mpongose. A huge number of tips flooded in from the surrounding communities, which often led police on fruitless searches. But finally, in the early hours of the next morning, a detective, accompanied by Sibusiso's friend, who'd continued to stick with the police in the hopes that he could assist with his capture, spotted the man hiding near a house in Quad Debeka. Sibusiso was incredibly drunk and made a lame attempt to attack the officer and his friend with a brick, but was quickly brought down by the police officer and placed under arrest. Although too intoxicated to be interviewed, his clothing was seized and photographs were taken of the scratches Ayaka had left on his arms, neck and face. He tried to claim that they'd come from him running through the bushes, but the pattern and his DNA identified under her fingernails proved otherwise. Zoli was given the news that her husband had been arrested, which at least put to rest any lingering fears she may have had about him coming for her or her family members. The communities that Zoli's children had been a part of were completely devastated by their loss. Pinetown Girls High held a remembrance service for Ayaka, and teachers spoke of what a promising future she had, how they knew she would have performed brilliantly in matric and undoubtedly secured a bursary to study whatever she wanted to. Her friends spoke of a kind and loyal girl who was always their safe space and someone they could count on. The friend she had been with on the day she was taken struggled for a long time to come to terms with what had happened and to recognize that there was really nothing she could have done. The school the younger children attended also mourned their passing, with their classmates finding it difficult to comprehend that their friends were never coming back, and worst of all, that their daddy had done this to them. The court proceedings against Sibusiso Mpongose moved relatively quickly. He said that he did not wish to apply for bail and quickly indicated that he would be pleading guilty. On the 17th of September, all four children were laid to rest in a mass funeral. Zoli had written a eulogy which one of her family members read out for her. In it, she apologized to her children for not being able to protect them. She expressed to Ayaka, who would have turned 17 the day before the funeral, that she had always been her pride and joy, and she hadn't just been a big sister to her siblings, but also almost a second mother. She told her children that she would always pray for them and had no idea how she was going to live without them. In October, Sibusiso officially entered a guilty plea on 4 counts of murder and described exactly how he had killed the children. He continued to claim that he had killed his children because he believed that their mother was having an affair. How one action seemed to reconcile with the other in his mind is incomprehensible. Revenge filicide is just that. It is the murder of a child or children for the sole purpose of injuring the spouse or partner in a way that can never be undone or healed. Rather than murdering the spouse or partner directly, the perpetrator sets out to ensure that they will have to live the rest of their lives without their children, which they very well know is the worst reality for most parents. Revenge filicide is often paired with the suicide or attempted suicide of the perpetrator, as they seek to avoid punishment for their crimes themselves. The horrific reality is that suicide often becomes a bridge too far for these individuals, who have seemingly thought little about killing innocent children, but can't seem to get to the point of hurting themselves. Filicide for the purposes of revenge is psychologically a very distinct crime from that of what is called altruistic filicide, in which the perpetrator is in a state of mind where they truly think for that period that killing their children is the best thing they can do. Of course, this is just a delusion, and not at all fair or just. But the psychological journey to get to that point and the emotions accessed are very different. Revenge, familicide, or intimate partner murder are similar related crimes, which spur off the same self-centered emotional experience as revenge filicide. In those cases, the perpetrator will also kill the partner, or in some cases, kill only the partner and not the children, to seek their revenge. The sentencing proceedings began in November, with factors in mitigation and aggravation of sentence being presented to the judge. In mitigation, Sibusiso's legal representative told the judge that the man had been in a deep state of despair due to the breakdown of his marriage and his unfounded suspicion around his wife's infidelity. To be clear, I call them unfounded. He didn't. He also said that Sibusiso was already suffering and a long prison sentence would not be appropriate in their mind. Of course, the states strongly disagreed and requested a life sentence for the murder of each of the four children, citing the heinousness of the man's actions as particularly aggravating. Tsolisile's victim impact statement was read out in aggravation of sentence. In it, she said she had remained in deep grief and could not bring herself to go back to work as a teacher because being around children was just too painful for her. Most days, she said, she found it difficult to even get out of bed, as there seemed to be no point anymore. In passing down sentence, the judge said, quote, "It seems that the severe sentence imposed has had no deterrence on people like you, who have no value for human life, let alone the lives of your own flesh and blood, and believe that you can carry out your careless and inhumane actions on a mere whim of suspicion. I fail to understand what would give you or anyone else the right to do so." End quote. The judge then handed down four life sentences to Sibusiso Mpongosi, which would be served concurrently. He will be eligible for parole in 2044. As Sibusiso passed Loli's family members and Vusigiani's family members on his way down after sentencing, he swore at them, just further confirming how little remorse he had for what he had done. "I can echo the judge's sentiment in that I too will never truly understand what level of audacity and selfishness it takes to convince yourself that you have the right to take the lives of others, especially completely innocent children, because your ego has been bruised. Because that's all it is. You have to be deeply obsessed with yourself for the end of a relationship to mean the death of four children. And perhaps the most terrifying thing is that up until that point, Sibusiso Mpongose was seen by most as a great dad, a good husband, and an all-round good guy. And yet, his mask had started to fall the minute he was no longer in control. And there are so many people walking around us with the same masks and the same level of self-importance, just waiting for the moment to reveal itself. Kuhle konke, sipesitle, kwezi, and ayaka. Rest gently. For more victim-focused true crime contents, please follow True Crime South Africa on the app you're using to listen right now. I also have another podcast you might like called I Lived Through This. Follow the podcasts on social media platforms for updates on new episodes and other crime-related stuff. If you'd like to support the podcast and grab some True Crime South Africa branded merch, listen up. TCSA has partnered with the SA Criminologist platform. And if you head over to their website now, you can stock up on a wide range of true crime-themed merch, including tumblers, stickers, pens, mugs, and so much more. And if you use the code TCSA at checkout, you'll get a site-wide discount of 10%. Check out the full range of true crime-themed merch at sacriminologist.co.za and support TCSA while grabbing some truly cool goodies for you or your partner in crime. I'll be back with another episode before you know it. Until then, thank you so much for your support, and I'll chat to you soon.